Thanks for joining us this morning. Our guests today are Ellen Jimenez, who is the chair for the Military Affairs Committee, and Master Sergeant Dominic Flores. And tell us about, I want to hear everything about you. Okay, you're giving.
Yes, hi.
He just gave us the sign that he is not a Master Sergeant.
What are you?
I'm whatever you want. No, I'm a Senior Master Sergeant.
We demoted him, Sherry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I still got I'm getting used to it still.
So I'm just going off my M Sergeant here, so I assumed it was a Master Sergeant. Tell me about you. How do you get into the military, your background, how long you've been doing it, and where do you work?
Okay, that's a big question.
I know, I want to hear everything.
So I'll start off with where I work at. I work at the 162nd Wing. It's the Arizona Air National Guard, located there in Valencia between Campbell and Park. And I've been there for coming up on 23 years now. I joined right after high school, and it's been a pretty cool ride ever since.
Now, are you a pilot?
You know, I used to tell when I was a young man, 20 years old, 18, 19, I wouldn't argue with that if maybe a lady guessed that, but no, I'm not a pilot.
So you use this to pick up girls?
That was the main reason. No. just kidding. No, so when I first joined, I was a avionics technician. So basically, it's kind of like a mechanic, but it's more towards the maintaining the electronic systems on board the F-16. And so that was my primary job working there in the Air National Guard. I did that for about 16 years or so. But then I had a big career change within the military where I sought out to become a first sergeant. A first sergeant is a special duty in the United States Air Force. And ultimately, I was successful in reaching that goal. Now, and it's been really cool ride since then. I think I'm coming up on 6 years now with the Diamond.
Okay, do you just stay right here in Tucson, or do you have to travel around? I know a lot of military, I've learned, travel like every 2-3 years. They have to move. Do you do that with the Air National Guard, or do you just stay here?
Well, it's one of the benefits, I think. Well, depending on what you're looking for. If you're a hometown person like myself, it's one of the benefits of being able to serve in the military, but still being able to keep your roots here in your hometown. So, no, I don't have to PCS, as they would say, in the active duty military. I get to serve here in Tucson, where I was born and raised, and that was a big draw for me.
So how many times has the Air National Guard been like deployed? This border situation, were they affected by it?
Yes. Yeah. We've had, since I've been in, at least I can speak to that. We've gone to support, border operations. As far as I know, it's 3 times now. So, it's not a deployment, obviously you're in your home state, but, in 06 to 07, I was in Nogales for 1 year, supporting Border Patrol operations. During that time, I assisted them by working they have a series of cameras that watch the border. So they trained me to work those cameras, to work the radio system, and it was a lot of fun. Got to meet a lot of Border Patrol agents.
Yeah, we've got some pretty cool agents.
Right. Yeah, that mission, if I recall correctly, it was Operation Jumpstart is what they called it.
Yes.
Right. And then again, 2010 to 2011, I was out there working with the Army. That was Operation Copper Cactus. But this time I was on what they called an EIT site. It was an entry identification team. So I was a team leader there with, I think, about 6 Army soldiers. And we would do like a 24-hour shift out in the desert, just kind of set up a little campsite and look for people that potentially are trying to enter the country illegally. We would report that to Border Patrol, the men and women that are out there on their patrols. And they would respond to that suspicious activity. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I know the last deployment, a lot of them were stationed at Davis-Monthan.
Right.
Sleeping in tents.
Sleeping in tents. I missed that part. I don't know. I got lucky.
Do you, because you're here, you get to go home every night?
Well, it doesn't seem interesting to me because a lot of my peers at the Air National Guard are in the same situation, but I should probably back up a little bit here. So I've always been a traditional guardsman, a drill status traditional guardsman. What that means is I would go and do 1 week in a month, 2 weeks in the summer, and that's been the majority of my career. I did do the Euro 607 with the border mission, 2010, 2011, another border mission, 2016, a deployment to Saudi Arabia. Some of my active duty counterparts would not call that a deployment because it was Saudi Arabia, but you know, you're away from your family for 6 months. It was
that counts.
Yeah, I say it counts. So it was challenging being away from my kids, my wife. But so other than that, my full time job, in order to, you know, the things that you know keep my family fed and you know, roof over our heads, I work for the Tucson Police Department, and I've been doing that for 19 years now.
Where?
Mostly, let's see, the city of Tucson is divided up into four slices of
chunks,
pie, if you will. Right. Yeah. So there's four divisions, in the patrol, operations part of it. I've been assigned to Operations Division Midtown, which is at just a big center chunk of the city, and to Operations Division West. And that made up just those two, those are the only two divisions I was able to work in, as a patrol officer, a patrol sergeant, a detective sergeant, and then and now as a lieutenant. My last assignment with the police department before I went on active duty orders is most recently was the executive officer to the chief of police. I did that for about 10 months and left that position to go on active duty orders to serve as a full-time first sergeant with the 162nd Wing.
So now you're part-time with the police department?
Well... That's a good question.
Yeah.
No, so I am on a military leave status with the Tucson Police Department. And so I've got a clock ticking basically to get back there and, you know, make sure they don't clean my locker out.
I heard they already did.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
They miss him.
You see the box in the corner? That's your stuff.
I see the empty donut box. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So you've been, what made you join the police department? If you joined, which did you join first, the military or the police?
So I first joined the military. I first joined the military just a few months out of high school.
Okay.
December of 96, December 2nd of 96 is when I took my oath. And I joined the police department April of 2000.
Very cool. 4 years later.
Yeah. Well, I was... You can't apply unless you're 21 years old or
exactly.
If you turn 21 before you graduate the academy. And I applied when I was 21. I got to the academy when I was 22. And it's been a pretty cool ride. You asked me. You said, "Why did I join the police department?"
Yeah, why not?
I love that question. Okay.
Catch me.
So
guys.
There was a gentleman by the name of Bobby Boone. He came to my school when I was in elementary, St. John's on Ahoy. And he gave I think it was on railroad safety. And I think I was like in fourth grade or something. But tall, black guy, cowboy, Spanish speaker, was at St. John's giving this safety training with trains or something like that, how to avoid train tracks or whatever. But he made a big impression on me, just this larger than life figure. And I thought he was the coolest guy. And so, as luck would have it, fast forward a number of years later, my first job was as a bag boy at, was called Abco Foods at Mission and Ajo. And lo and behold, they have a security that works there once in a while. They hire Tucson police officers to store security. One of those guys is Bobby Boone. So I get to meet him all over again. I tell him the story. I don't know if he remembers or not. I don't think he picked me out of the crowd when he was there. When I was in fourth grade, but he would tell me these really cool stories about being a police officer and the fun stuff, obviously. And so I was pretty sold on that and pretty sure I was going to be a police officer when I grew up. So
very cool.
Yeah.
You never know when you're talking to people and you're presenting the impact that you have.
I actually got to work with Bobby Boone. I was a patrol sergeant in Operations Division West and he was there And I told him the story all over again, and he would call me, he'd call me Mijo. That was his,
That's so sweet.
He would say, "Hey, Mijo." That was pretty cool.
Tell our audience what that means in case they don't know.
It means son.
That's right. Yeah, and so. Your son is here, actually.
He is here, yes.
Are you going into eighth grade or getting out of eighth grade?
I'm leaving eighth grade and going to South Point.
You're going to South Point?
Yes.
Oh, well, Dad.
Better buckle up.
Yeah.
Because they don't horse around over there. You have to study.
Yeah, they don't.
Okay.
He's pretty excited about that.
I would be excited, too. Do you use sports?
Yeah, I do volleyball.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get in on a scholarship for volleyball?
No.
Just thought I'd ask.
Dad's scholarship.
He's actually going to BC, my picture in the hallway, because I graduated there in 96.
Oh, so. Wow. You going to draw a little mustache on it when you see it? Okay. I want to
do that, actually.
I'll give you the marker.
Just blame it on Sherry.
Yeah, my son went there for a little while. Then he ended up at the Marine Military Academy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He graduated from there.
Very cool.
With honors. As a, I can't remember what his rank was, first lieutenant or something like that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Ellen and find out what's going on with MAC, Military Affairs Committee.
I hope I'm ready.
I hope you are too.
She's ready.
She's ready. Okay, let's go.
You don't need to own a gun to make sure your children are trained and know what to do if they come across one. For the past 20 years, the folks at Diamondback have taught firearm safety and concealed weapon permit classes. Hi, I'm Ben Anderson, Director of Training at Diamondback Shooting Sports. Sign up for a class today at dbacktraining.com so you can be prepared for the unexpected. We're open 7 days a week, so stop in and introduce yourself. We're located in the Gaslight Plaza at the southwest corner of Broadway and Kolb on Tucson's east side.
Hi, it's me, Sherry. At Geneva Financial, we offer an array of loan products from commercial, construction, investor, all-in-one, a HEROES program for first responders as well as teachers, and of course, reverse mortgages. If you're shopping for a loan or know somebody who is, give me a call at 310-9900. We offer loans for humans by humans. So let's see what I can do for you. That's 310-9900. Thanks. I look forward to hearing from you.
If you think making false threats is a joke, think again. Any communication threatening students, teachers, and staff at schools or public places is a federal crime that could lock people behind prison doors for up to 5 years.
I'm FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch, making you aware that hoax threats have real consequences. We don't want to see a young person begin their adult lives with a felony record.
Making false threats is not a joke. Think before you post. Visit FBI.gov.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Ellen Jimenez, who is the chair for the Military Affairs Committee, and we have, I don't know what that sign means.
He's a senior.
A senior.
It's a giant S.
Okay. Is
Master
that what
Sergeant.
That is? Yeah. A senior Master Sergeant Dominic Flores.
Think of it as an old
means
Master
I'm older.
Sergeant.
He's old?
Yeah. A lot of gray hair.
He looks old. So, Ellen. I want to hear about the Military Affairs Committee. How long have you been doing this?
Oh, the MAC. So the MAC is an all-volunteer committee of the Tucson Metro Chamber. We have, and I'll talk about the we before I go to the I, but we have been around for 90 years. We are the longest.
You look good.
Thank you. Thank you. It's because I don't work out.
That's the key.
We've been around for 90 years, and we are the longest standing and running committee of the Tucson Metro Chamber.
Oh, wow.
So I like to point that out because that means we started in 1929. Davis-Monthan Air Force Base opened in 1941. There's a lot of years in between, which means there's a lot of history that has occurred here. And while I don't have all the facts in front of me, but I want to think that we were an active part of getting the base where we are, getting the 162nd here. And then the MAC is very, very special too in that we support all of our military in Tucson. So that includes Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. It includes the Morris Air National Guard. We're the 162nd Wing. Did I do it right?
You did it better than me, actually. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so I passed. I can go home now.
Flying colors.
I'll see you later.
Tell me what the... What currently is the Military Affairs Committee working on?
So with that 90-year celebration, with the Air Force, we also work with our Army, our Navy, and our Marines. So just this week, we had an awards luncheon which celebrated our sailors, our Marines, and some of our soldiers. So we got to recognize some of our top soldiers, sailors, and Marines here in Tucson at the NOSC, or the Navy Operational Support Center, which is right here in Tucson.
It's very cool.
It is cool. There's lots of great things going on. Next month in June, we will be celebrating our Jewett winner. This is our 30th year to give out this award, and it's at Davis-Monthan.
Explain what it is.
So the Jewett is named after a previous MAC chairperson, and he retired out of Davis-Monthan and started a media organization here in town. But we give this award out to a unit or a squadron or a group at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base who has really connected with our community. So there's some mission activities. There's, why am I blanking the word, but just some service-oriented activities in our community. Some things that I love about our military is that they silently and without wanting or needing recognition, they do activities in our community which make us better. They do street cleanups. They're in our shelters. They are at the food bank. They are in our schools. They reach out and connect, and not necessarily in uniform, as you will see Senior Master Sergeant Flores here today. They're here because it's right and it's good, and because they want to. Sometimes I'm sure they are voluntold, but I really believe that they are out here because they want to be.
I was not voluntold, just for the record. I
want to get what, to be here today?
Alan voluntold me. I don't know if that counts.
See, I had a feeling.
I don't know if that counts, though.
I don't know. Well, you know, and Chief Neil wanted Alan to be out here, but, you know, I thought...
He's such a nice guy.
He is a great guy, but here we have Senior Master Sergeant Flores. Chief Neil, he's way more fun than you.
I'm going to tell Chief Neil you said that.
That's not fair. I mean, Chief Neil... I can't say any bad about the guy. He's awesome.
I can't either. He's an awesome guy.
He's actually my supervisor right now, and it's been a great ride with him. I've been working for him directly for about a year and a half now, and it's been awesome.
He actually went to my friend as a teacher, and he went to her classroom, the fourth
That's
grade.
Right. He
was
did.
It fourth grade or third grade? I don't know, but he went there and talked to the kids, and it was interesting because some of the kids have parents who are in the military. And they, you know, we'll tell them Chief Neil said hi, because everybody knows him.
They do.
Yeah. Everybody
not
knows
shy.
Chief Neil. No, yep. There's nobody else like him. I never met another person like him.
One of my favorite stories about him is that he'll run on Valencia. He gets there in the morning before his airmen get there.
Yep.
And he's running, jogging, doing his PT down Valencia. And his airmen are seeing this. And to me, that would be one of those guilt.
Yes.
Kick in the gut.
Guilt trip.
Moment, seeing my chief running down Valencia with all this ongoing traffic.
Every day.
And I'm not.
Every day I get to work. He has been there for at least an hour. He's already worked out. He's already exercised. And that's just the way
he's wired.
His entire military career. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I want to get him a shirt that says, in the front, I'm running, where are you? Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
That's like a direct cut down to me, I think. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a direct cut down to me, too.
You're telling me I got to get out there. That's fine.
Take your son with you. His son's name is Diego.
Correct. Yeah, and he's actually a runner. He's a really good runner.
Yeah.
You should get your dad out there and start running down Valencia.
Truth be told, you guys are out there even before Chief Neil, right?
Are we winking? Then
winking?
Yes.
Of course we are. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about Honor Flight. I know we had a huge... Did they charter a whole airplane that they had 82 people?
82 veterans. World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam War veterans.
How did that go? Because it sounded to me like they left early morning.
It was fast and it was furious.
And returned the next day.
We left about 7:30 in the morning on a Tuesday, returned Wednesday night about 8:30. We had a chartered plane that was full of our veterans and our guardians that went with them. I was honored to be a part of this flight and take them to these memorials that have been put up in their honor.
Did they have the honor dinner?
We had our honor dinner for them as well. Obviously, it's not a short flight between here and D.C.
Right.
So we got there, and it's tiring to travel.
Was it nonstop?
It was nonstop. With it
that
being
helps.
Chartered, it is nonstop.
Because we stopped in, I did it a couple of years ago, and we stopped in, I think it was Dallas-Fort Worth. And what really impressed me about the whole honor flight thing is the logistics. They had that down to the minute. People, we had, our lunch was brought to us at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
It was like,
that's awesome.
And we got to Baltimore, and the town crier was there. Did he meet you?
We flew into Dulles this trip, so not the
town
crier.
So you didn't have the town crier?
I want to say it was another special moment for them. They have honor flight volunteers there in the Washington, D.C. area, and they were there at the gate. They made a huge parade to welcome all of our veterans as
they
got
off the
flight.
And there's not a dry eye in the house.
There's not a dry eye in the airport. It's great to see folks that come out who are taking off in other flights or landing themselves, and they pull in and make it an even stronger parade and are clapping for them and shaking their hands.
Merchants from the shops in mm-hmm. the airport will come out.
And saying those two magical words, thank you.
Exactly.
It goes a long way. It's a neat experience. I highly recommend it to anybody out there who would like to be a guardian. If you have a loved one who served that maybe you want to learn a little bit more, do it. You can learn a lot from these guys as they share stories to you or each other. But the money that you pay to be that guardian, the veterans go free. There's right. sponsorship opportunities to help them, help Honor Flight pay for them to go. And as a guardian, we will pay, and that money will cover your airfare, it covers meals, it covers hotel, and it gives you a life.
It's priceless. It's a priceless thing. It really is. I've got my book here from the honor flight that I did, number 24.
Good.
Fred Lawrence was my veteran.
Have you had him on the show?
I have not. He's not a big talker.
Okay.
I think it would be me, and he would be nodding.
What about Walter?
Walter is amazing. We have a World War II veteran who is a dear friend of ours, and he went on the first honor flight number one, and he was a POW in a Stalag 17.
And he is a talker. He
is a talker. He's a very young, 39 years old. So if he's listening, I got your age right, Walter.
39. That's right.
My 39. Mother was 39 too.
Diego actually met Walter.
Oh, that's right.
We need to hear Walter on the show.
He's amazing. He's truly, truly amazing.
I would love to hear the stories. My mom and dad were both in the Marine Corps. Didn't hear a whole lot about it, but, you know, I listen to other people talk, and you can put two and two together. I've got my dad's sea bag, so I know where he was.
That's neat.
Yeah. He was in the Pacific Theater. And I do know that he was on Iwo Jima from the first day of the invasion until it was secure.
Wow.
So.
Ira Hayes' cousin was on this flight with us. His cousin is a World War II vet. So it was kind of neat for us to hear some of his
perspective
of Ira Hayes at the Iwo Jima Memorial.
My dad, when I was
pretty
little,
powerful.
My dad told me that they practice raising that fence. Photographer over and over again. They kept taking pictures. No, hold it this way. No, hold it that way. Over and over again until they got the photograph right.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Oh, he was sitting on the runway on his helmet, having a cigarette, watching them do that.
Wow.
And he told me that when I was in like first or second grade.
They knew they were making a moment. That's awesome.
Yeah. But he said it wasn't like, oh, click. It was practiced. But we digress.
Good on you to go. And good on you to talk about it. The more people we can get engaged and involved in that program, the better. And even if you don't go on a flight, find out when the next ones are, and I can kind of give you an inside secret, I suppose. But November and October, or October and November, are the next two flights, and Sherry will be happy to share with you those dates and times.
I want Walter's information. I want him to come on, because what we heard about...
Do you have 4 hours? He'll talk for four
hours. That's fine. The things that we heard about from these people and the impact that this trip has on the veterans, it's huge. And some of them didn't even have words to express it, but you could tell by their emotion that it meant so much to them to be able to go and look at these memorials that were actually built in their honor, and they'd never seen them before.
It's a very emotional experience for them.
Yes. And it was emotional for me too, because it was like, everybody's crying, I'm going to help you. We're all going to cry together.
There's no crying in baseball.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few.
You don't need to own a gun to make sure your children are trained and know what to do if they come across one. For the past 20 years, the folks at Diamondback have taught firearm safety and concealed weapon permit classes. Hi, I'm Ben Anderson, Director of Training at Diamondback Shooting Sports. Sign up for a class today at dbacktraining.com so you can be prepared for the unexpected. We're open 7 days a week, so stop in and introduce yourself. We're located in the Gaslight Plaza at the southwest corner of Broadway and Kolb on Tucson's east side.
Hi, it's me, Sherry. At Geneva Financial, we offer an array of loan products, from commercial, construction, investor, all-in-one, a HEROES program for first responders as well as teachers, and of course, reverse mortgages. If you're shopping for a loan or know somebody who is, give me a call at 310-9900. We offer loans for humans by humans. So let's see what I can do for you. That's 310-9900. Thanks. I look forward to hearing from you.
If you think making false threats is a joke, think again. Any communication threatening students, teachers, and staff at schools or public places is a federal crime that could lock people behind prison doors for up to 5 years.
I'm FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch, making you aware that hoax threats have real consequences. We don't want to see a young person begin their adult lives with a felony record.
Making false threats is not a joke. Think before you post. Visit FBI.gov.
Okay, thanks for staying with us. Our guests are Ellen Jimenez, who is the chair for the Military Affairs Committee, and we have Senior Master Sergeant Dominic Flores, and his son Diego is here, who is a brand new student for South Point next year.
Yeah, I'm the Lancers. I love it.
Go Lancers. So I want to talk a little bit about it. Somebody's interested in doing the honor flight, or a company wants to just sponsor a veteran, who do they contact? How do they go about doing this?
The best route, honestly, is just to go to the website.
Honor Flight.
Mm-hmm. Honor Flight of Southern Arizona. We have two honor flights in the state of Arizona, and we have our own here in Tucson area, because we have such a large population of veterans, which is good, very good. But we needed our own separate honor flight down here.
And you know what made me sad when I went on there? We had 23 people. We could have taken 25, but we didn't have enough sponsors. And I think that's something that people need to realize. You don't need to go on the flight to sponsor a flight. You can't, you know, take a couple of days out of your life and chaperone. No. You can actually help by donating to this cause.
Absolutely. And every dollar counts. So even $10 that goes to getting a veteran out there. And it's a 501c3. So there is that tax deduction if you want to use that too. But lots of win-wins when you support this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know the company I work for, Geneva Financials, wants to get involved with this. And I gave them all the paperwork. Said, get on it, because this is really important.
Good. And as we've all just discussed, our World War II veterans, they're leaving us every day. And so we need to take any opportunity we can today to give
acknowledge
them,
them
the credit they
and
deserve.
Say thank you.
Absolutely.
And this is a great way. And a lot of people, all these memorials were built for them.
Yes.
And so many of them have never seen them.
Yes.
And when you see a photograph, it's one thing, but you see it in person, that's huge.
And even for them to see it amongst each other, it's just a different
to
experience.
To share their experience because they're with their peers. And
yes.
When they start talking about their experiences and they're with each other, they say things to each other that they wouldn't say, like my dad wouldn't talk to me.
Oh, no, not
about
at all.
Anything because it was too horrific.
This was my second flight. My first one, I went with my grandfather, and he was a Korean War vet. And I grew up all these years, I had no idea because he never talked about it. So even on this flight, I would try to stand nearby as he would start telling stories to other veterans. And it was great to see him actually talk about it a little bit.
Yes.
And then he would
very
glance over and notice that Ellen was listening and his mouth would just zip right up.
Yeah.
So I knew at that point I just needed to stay away. Once he started talking, I had to kind of make my distance, but try to eavesdrop as much as I
read,
possibly
read their
could.
Lips.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Or find the others. What did he say?
Exactly.
But, and then on that too, I mean, he just passed away in November.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How grateful am I to be able to have that experience with him? How amazing that it was that he got to experience that flight and see those memorials amongst his peers who had also been stationed at some of the same bases he was at. It's a very powerful experience for them.
Something they share.
Do
that
it.
We're just bystanders, but so nice to be able to support that. And I hope everybody listening will go to the website and donate to that because it's so meaningful.
Donate,
and if you get a chance,
sign up. They're
go.
Looking for volunteers.
Yeah.
Be there at the
Fill
welcome
the
home,
form,
send off.
And there's a vetting process in the sponsorship or the chaperone portion of it.
There is.
So, you know, get your paperwork in, let them do what they need to do, and then they'll send you a letter saying you're on the next flight.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, carry their suitcases. You are their beast of burden for the whole time.
My sweet veteran this trip. Do you
and
have my
get,
bag?
Yes, yeah, they get mad bag. Because they want to carry
Don't
their
lose
own
it.
Bag. It's like, no, I'm carrying your bag. Get over it. But yeah, it's a worthy cause and everybody needs to do it. The other thing I want to talk about is the Honorary Commander Program.
I see your checklist in front of you.
Yes.
I'm extremely proud right now.
I want to talk about somebody wants to be an honorary commander. I know there's a vetting process for this too.
There is.
Tell us.
So what do you know about this? What do you know about this, Ellen?
I got to be an honorary commander at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base.
Oh, that's right.
Not 162nd, just putting it out there, but Davis-Monthan Air Force Base.
Ouch.
It is a 2-year seat, and this is a great opportunity for our business leaders, community to learn about a day in the life of our military. It's a great opportunity to engage. Like I said earlier, we see our military definitely reach out into the community to be a part of Tucson, but this is a great opportunity for Tucson to be a part of our military world. So it is a 2-year seat. You get assigned to a squadron or a group at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And at that point, you learn so much and you can ask questions and you can be a part of training opportunities like you were yesterday here at Davis-Monthan. So for anybody out there, Sherry is an honorary commander. And then I have the honor of chairing the Desert Thunder Squadron. And I call it kind of like our boot group. We got booted out. And I say that just because it is a 2-year seat. And then at that 2-year time, you do need to step down and let somebody else come in and be a part of this great experience. But at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, once you do get booted, and I use quotation marks, booted, you become a member of the Desert Thunder Squadron. And we are a group of all alumni honorary commanders of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And we have activities in which we do try to recruit and meet folks in our community to become members of the Honorary Commander Program. We also still continue to support our base and have lots of activities that go on. But with that, we did make a checklist of activities that we try to encourage our honorary commanders to be a part of. So this two-year seat, it's fast, and it goes
really quick,
and you don't have a lot of time. So when you do it, definitely throw everything you have into it. You will get as much out of it as you put into it.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about the one thing that you do for the new recruits that come in and are transferred to Davis Month, and every Thanksgiving, you put on this huge Thanksgiving dinner.
We do. So this is part of our Military Affairs Committee program, but every year we have a Thanksgiving dorm bash, and we put it on at Davis Month and Air Force Base in the courtyard of the dorms. So this, we will invite businesses and families in the community to cook a full Thanksgiving meal. We don't want it to be, we just want it to be home and authentic. So we last year had 35 turkeys, and I think we had 25 hams, and we fed about 500 airmen. It was also about the time that we had some of our Army soldiers deployed here at Davis Monthan for the border mission. So we got to feed some of our soldiers that are not necessarily from Tucson. What a great story for them to take with them as they go back to their bases.
Yeah, because they miss their holiday.
Were they intense, these Army soldiers?
They were wonderful.
Were they staying intense?
Were they intense? So that's another activity
I'm
going to
be a
part
of.
They... No. let me tell you how
much
they
nervous?
Loved being
tense.
Here. They were in our Air Force version of deployed tents, which meant they had air conditioning, which meant they had flooring. They were talking about on their regular deployments, they don't get to stay in places that are this fancy and Air Forced up.
Air Forced up.
It's the beauty of the branch.
It is Love the it. Beauty of the branch. And they absolutely appreciated being deployed here.
I know we made cookies and cakes and all kinds of things over the holidays to take to them too.
Yes,
It was very cool. But I think what you do annually for that Thanksgiving for these kids that are just deployed here that's a touch of home that
so
makes them feel so welcome.
Yeah, that they're 18 to 24 years old. They're hungry. My son is 18, and I can't tell you he's
like
always hungry.
Right.
Every 5 minutes, Mom, I'm hungry. So these kids, it's a lot of fun to watch them come in. They take their plates, and we pile those plates high because you've got turkey, you've got ham, stuffing, veggies, a little bit
trimmings.
Of salad if they have to have that. Lots of dessert. We talked about Vantage West Credit Union earlier. They generally really jump up and take care of the desserts portion, and they're out there serving. So folks in our community, businesses in our community will take that full day off. They come out, and what we do is we set up, we decorate, we cook, we clean up, and we feed our young
people.
Airmen and this year's soldiers.
Yeah.
And they all come through, and they'll go through not just once, not twice, not just three times. Some of them will go through five times.
Yeah.
And then we send them away with to-go
really
containers.
Cool. That is really
so
cool.
So they can
though.
Take it back with them.
That's very cool.
What a great message.
Yes.
That's
and
awesome.
Letting their families know that we're taking care of your kids.
That's the other thing I tell them. Call your mom. Tell your mom we're taking care of you.
They get a little bit of home. That's good.
Yes, it is. And then you mentioned the cookies and the gifts. So Operation Zulu is another program that the Military Affairs Committee puts on each year. This year will be year number 9.
It's called Zulu?
Zulu, Z-U-L-U.
Okay.
And this began with a chief who was deployed, and he reached out because he was looking around, kind of seeing a lot of young airmen and soldiers and sailors who were spending their first holiday away from home in an undisclosed location and not with family. So he asked us to collect some gifts and wrap them and ship them over, and he would play Santa. So each year we have deployed Santas, and they're usually our first sergeants or our chiefs. and they get to be Santa Claus and hand out gifts on Christmas morning.
That has to be fun.
It's amazing. So yeah. This year kind of changed a little bit because we had our own deployment in our own backyard, and Operation Zulu happened here at Davis-Monthan with our deployed soldiers.
Very cool.
And they...
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you had a Christmas tree up and tons of gifts there. And they got to feel a little bit of a...
Okay, if somebody wants to help, I think we need to take a break. But when we come back from the break, we're going to
You said we had 3 hours.
I know, but we have to take a break.
That was 4 hours.
When we come back, we're going to talk about how the community can get involved with these projects.
Got it. Love
okay.
it.
We'll be back.
Established in 1865, the Pima County Sheriff's Department is one of the largest agencies in the nation that ensures the safety and trust with integrity and respect. With decades of change and development, we have grown by instituting progressive plans of preparedness to work as a vigilant team serving and protecting. With careful selection, every department member is prepared today to protect for tomorrow, serving with principle, professionalism, and purpose. To learn more about wearing the badge for your community, visit pimasheriff.org and follow our social media for up-to-date events and information. Join us in our commitment to this community and vow to never become complacent.
Hi, it's me, Sherry. At Geneva Financial, we offer an array of loan products from commercial, construction, investor, all-in-one, a HEROES program for first responders as well as teachers, and of course, reverse mortgages. If you're shopping for a loan or know somebody who is, give me a call at 310-9900. We offer loans for humans by humans. So let's see what I can do for you. That's 310-9900. Thanks. I look forward to hearing from you.
911, what are you reporting?
I'd like to report a break-in into my car. I came out this morning and my laptop bag is gone and some of my books are gone.
Are any of the windows broken or anything like that?
Nothing's broken.
Did you leave your vehicle unlocked or did you lock it before you went inside?
I thought I locked it, but I don't think I did.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get an officer out to you as soon as I can.
This doesn't have to be you. Remember to lock it or lose it. This has been a message from the Marana Police Department.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Ellen Jimenez.
Hello.
And Senior Master Sergeant Dominic Flores.
Hello.
And his son, Diego.
Hi.
Representing South Point almost.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know how we're talking Davis-Monthan, but we're also talking the Air National Guard. Mm-hmm. How does the community get involved with helping both entities? Because I don't think a lot of people think about the Air National Guard being here.
Join the MAC. You can support us all, support all of them.
Yeah, that's good. I will do that right away. Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking to the listeners. Yeah, I agree with you on the what you said about a lot of people don't know the Air National Guard is there. Because it's when you say I'm serving in the, you know, I'm in the, I'm a member of the Arizona Air National Guard, people will assume you're talking about Davis-Monthan, not
right.
the Morris Air National Guard base. But yeah, we're there. We've got a global mission and, you know, a state mission, everything we're doing out there. It's pretty fantastic.
I know the Air National Guard also has an honorary commander program.
Yes.
Tell me how that works and how would somebody get involved with it? He's saying, I don't know.
I'm looking at Ellen. You know, so I'm a worker bee. I go there to work. Go ahead.
You want me to jump in?
Yes.
Yes. So there is the public affairs office would probably be the best avenue, or even just reach out to us with the MAC, or even there is a strong support group which supports just the 162nd, the 162nd Air Guardians, and
right.
they have definitely the direct avenues to become involved in that.
Do you have to be nominated?
Yes.
Ellen, I'm so happy that you're here.
What?
Yeah, I'm just happy that Ellen's here.
Yes, you do. And it not necessarily nominated, but there is a process much like Davis-Monthan Air Force Base.
So they do a vetting process and...
Correct.
And
you can't
let
just
you
walk
know
in if... and say, I'm your new honorary commander. You'll need to be nominated or go through an application process.
And those honorary commanders do most of their... interaction down at the 162nd at
They can. It's going to be just like Davis Month in Air Force Base. It's a great opportunity to connect our airmen at 162nd to our community. It's same process. It's an opportunity for us to learn about the mission sets of the 162nd and airmen who are stationed there and live in our community. One of the things I always think about when I go onto the 162nd, I look around and I think, wow, these guys are our citizen airmen. They are our voters. They're here. They're lifelong members of Tucson. They don't just transfer into Tucson and get stationed here and then say, wow, I think I'm going to retire here. They're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It's they're part of the biggest differences. Yeah, we're not a transient group, so to speak. You know, the vast majority of us are from the state of Arizona, if not specifically Pima County. And yeah, it makes us very unique.
Very unique. Many even serve with their fathers or their mothers. You've got...
Oh, definitely generational. Yeah, you'll see the dads there, their sons, and then their sons are out there. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
I'm going to tell Adriana to call the station. She wants me to give a shout out, but the print on here is so small I can't read it. So call in. You want a shout out, get on the phone and call me.
So there.
Take that.
And thank you.
Yeah. I think it's something to do with the American Legion. I'm not sure. Give me a call. What?
Phone number is 520-790-2040.
I think she should know that. She works here.
It's for anybody else.
That is the phone number. And I haven't announced it, and I get chastised for that because it's supposed to be a live show, and I don't give people the phone number.
We'll do it out once more.
Do what?
We'll do it once more.
Okay.
Senior Mess Sergeant Flores will do it.
Okay, give us the phone number.
Hold on here. Let me get ready. Okay, I'm ready. It's 790-2040.
That's how a senior master sergeant says it.
Did I leave a digit out?
Okay, today is the 100th anniversary of the American Legion, and they're having a celebration. But like I said, the flyer is too small on my cell phone, so I can't read it. So if you want more information, Adriana's going to have to call in or go to their website, I would imagine, the American Legion website, and they'll have all the details. They're having an event today to celebrate that.
Awesome. So something that we didn't get to really touch on, first sergeants. The role of a first sergeant in the Air Force is quite unique and it's quite special. I always kind of say they see the good, they see the bad and the ugly. Do you want to kind of touch on that, Senior Master Sergeant Flores?
You're not going to let the Senior Master Sergeant thing go, are you?
No.
It's fine.
You earned it though.
So first sergeants, it's a special duty, like I said. I believe, actually, the Marines and the Army have a first sergeant position. I don't know what that looks like in the Navy, but a first sergeant is there to ensure the health, welfare, and morale of the troops and to assist the commander in maintaining good order and discipline. So the first sergeant works directly for the commander, and their primary duty is just to go out there and ensure that the troops are mission ready. And so the guiding lights that we use to make sure that they are mission ready is concerning ourselves with their health, their welfare, and their morale. And it is a very very awesome job to have. It still kind of blows me away that I get to be a first sergeant. It's pretty cool.
It sounds like a lot of responsibility too.
It's a giant umbrella what I just said of, you know, think of all the things that would have to fall under that umbrella of things that you're going to be concerned about and worried about, you know, to be honest with you. So yes, we do see a lot of the bad and the ugly that, you know, life happens, right? So.
And they see a lot of good and they get to be a part of all of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, but we get to see a lot of really good stuff too. A lot of pretty amazing stuff. You know, seeing airmen pulling themselves up and putting a plan together to reach their goals. And then you get to see them, you watch them progress and mature, and they go out and they do this amazing stuff. And it's pretty cool to be a part of that.
When was the last time you were deployed?
July 2016, came back January 2017.
And that's when you went to Saudi Arabia?
Yes, that's the, I've only deployed one time, and that was to Saudi Arabia.
Yep. What'd you do in Saudi Arabia?
I deployed as a first sergeant to take care of a bunch of our security forces defenders.
Logistics?
Security forces, that's basically like your base defense slash law enforcement on the base. And so it was pretty cool. Got to deploy and take care of those guys.
So if somebody gets in trouble, they have to answer to you?
Sometimes.
Not necessarily, but first sergeants are involved in the disciplinary process.
And give me an example of what a disciplinary process would be.
Somebody's late to work.
I mean, it would be something, you know, it could be something as simple as tardiness, but it would probably be something more severe as, you know, habitual tardiness or, you know, somebody lost their cool and...
did something stupid.
Yeah, did something stupid as a result of that. So the first sergeant would work with the commander to assure, you know, kind of have that discussion on what's the plan to redirect the ceremony and get him back on track. And
so do you ever fire anyone?
So... I've been involved. Yeah, these are good questions. No.
What happened to the warm and fuzzy questions?
Have you ever punched anyone? No. Apologize to the viewers, by the way, too. They've never heard my voice before, but man, my allergies are killing me today.
Oh, me too. My eyes are tearing. I can't see.
So,
yes. I learned something yesterday. I learned there's an honorable discharge and a general discharge.
Yes, there's a other than honorable and general. That's correct. So you asked about the firing thing. Obviously we've been involved in processes where, you know, an airman was administratively separated or...
Is that a nice way of saying fired?
Would that be a
general discharge or a dishonorable discharge?
It depends on the situation. They could be administratively separated and still receive an honorable discharge. It depends on all of the factors with...
Whatever the situation is. So the severity of it.
So there's several ways. I mean, I hate to say that there's several ways to fire somebody, but there's several ways to discontinue someone's service.
Discontinue.
In the military, to end their service, if you will. Well, because it's not always just, when you say fire, it sounds like it's really just bad for everyone. But there's a lot of occasions where it's just... Life situations have changed, and it's just not the right venue anymore for the airman, and maybe not the right fit, like you said, for that airman in our Air Force, and we have to part ways.
Life marches on.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Same in our civilian world. Sometimes we're just not a good fit for that organization, or the organization's not a good fit for us personally. It's going to...
Right. Things change. People change. But don't get me wrong. There definitely are times where it is very clear that we... need to fire, as you say, fire somebody and get them out of there. But I feel like more often than not, it's just things changing situationally for somebody in their life. And we got to part ways, like I said. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty sad.
Can be.
Think of all the ones who don't and are out there making a difference as well.
Well,
like our senior master sergeant Flores.
We're talking about the you know, people that we part ways with. But the cool thing about the disciplinary process that I've seen in the military is how it helps people grow and get better and faster and stronger and go on to have very successful careers. And I think that's the beauty in the way that we apply this progressive discipline.
And next week, we're actually going to be talking about the transition, people coming back and transitioning into civilian life. And we're going to be talking with the transition team. I didn't know we had one, but in all the resources that are available to our military and their family. And it's not like, you know, you come back from a war zone. This isn't just jet lag. You've got a transition process that you need to go through. So I want to thank you guys for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. We still have another hour.
at least another hour.
Sherry, you're awesome. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you for all you do, Sherry.
And we'll be here next week with Transition Team. So tune in, stay safe, shop local. See you. Bye.